Hey everyone, I'm your host Jack the Generalist, and today we're diving deep into art and philosophy of game lighting with one of the most respected voices in the field, Maria. For those of you who don't know her, she's a principal lighting artist, also a BAFTA member, and someone who's brought iconic game worlds to life from like AAA studios to the globe. Okay, first question to you, Maria, is, you know, let's start with the basics, who you are, and who, what do you do in your own words?
All right, yeah, so hello again, guys. Thanks for having me, Jake. So yeah, I'm Maria. I've been in games industry for 13-ish years, working as a video game lighting artist. So I've been worked for multiple AAA shooting games, such as Far Cry and Gears 5. And also I involved plenty of under like development titles. I've been worked with multicultural studios from China, Shanghai to Britain, in London and Manchester, and also in Los Angeles. For now, I'm settled in London and I'm currently working with Romero Games, and we are still doing like FPS games over here. And well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, so I wanted to start with things like, what is a lighting artist? I think that is something a lot of people who are starting out, they don't really choose to be, or it's not, it's something you come across, I feel, or if you worked in industry for a while, you would know what it is. I just happen to be knowing what it is because it was one of my first tasks in the industry, is to create lighting and bake lighting for like a VR experience. That's what I've done in the beginning of my career. So I wanted for you to explain it to complete new beginners who just like listening to the podcast right now.
Right. So yeah, it's a very interesting question because, well, I believe most of my fellow artists, they are coming from similar journey as yourself, Jake. So they probably touched other 3D discipline in the game development, such as texturing, modeling. But I myself actually never trained for games. I was actually trained for photography and stage design because I studied photography and filmmaking back to my uni. And back then, there's no such a subject specific towards video game development. So yeah, in 2007, I came to Brighton and in London in particular, studied stage design. It was a master degree in Kingston University, but what I do back then, because it's a master degree, so it's more for like research. Everybody has their own freedom to choose a topic. So I chose the exhibition space design and plus stage design. So basically I was doing set design in this like, or production design in film terminology. Mm-hmm. So that is where I start. But I've always loved to play video games. So yeah, at some point I'm like, oh yeah, I'll probably never get the chance to involve this profession because back then that was 2007 and I know little about, you know, softwares and coding. So, you know, as an art student in our brand, you have to get be super smart to involved into game development because you have to, you must know like coding, mathematics, or even physics for the animation, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, and occasionally, because I was playing with my friend at her place, we were playing the first Mirror's Edge. I believe I told this story many times in my article and other podcast, but yeah, I found like in the end of the credit, there is a credit called lighting artist. Wow. And at that very moment, my eyes are blinking. Trust me, Jake. Yeah, like after decades, I still remember it. Nice. It's like, wait a minute, I know how to light. And so if I could figure out how to transfer my light into, you know, video games, I can probably work in this industry. Mm. That's where I start. So I start doing my research back then, the 3D Artist, the magazine. Like if anybody study game dev in Europe, they probably know that magazine very well. Mm. So that's where I get like free tutorials. And eventually from the magazine, I saw, you know, forums like Polygon, and Baxim, I think it's VFX forum, and what else I've got? 3D Buzz, yeah, of course, yeah, because 3D Buzz, like, literally, I learned how to use Maya over there by myself. And by the time I was about to graduate from my university in England, so of course I'm looking for a job. And back then I recall I was doing like a part-time job, like basically like a runner, how they call them these days, for in theaters. So I was working as a runner and freelance photography, mainly for fashion, because that's what I was trained for. So I'm quite like feel comfortable swimming in that water. So yeah, I was basically like self-sustained, and then I registered myself a course which is teaching me how to use Unreal and Unity, and I think that was like a private run course. It's pretty much like our boot camp course these days. You know, you get them online, but back then you have to be on site, and the school will sign you up with like a multiple subscription. Back then I think it's GNOME and not Escape, but GNOME workshop definitely. So that's where I started. You know, I got assignment and I started practicing. And yeah, it's pretty much the journey. The first like glow, I hit a lot of hurdles when I'm trying to learning, you know, modeling, especially the vertex and the beveled edges. That's so difficult for me. But how I feel like when I start touching the rendering part, that is the camera and the mental ray. I think years ago I did an interview with Mr. Ryan Kingsley, and he also asking me something similar. It's like, how are you feeling the camera you were touching in 3D and the real world? And honest user feedback, that's exactly the same. So suddenly I feel like, okay, this is my place. I'm gonna start like developing here from here. And eventually I built up my portfolio and did some internship at a Chinese outsource company. Yeah. And after that I got my first job in Ubisoft. So that's where I started working Far Cry. That was 2012-ish.
Wow. That was Far Cry 3 or Far Cry 4?
Far Cry 4. Far Cry 4.
Wow. Yeah, that game looked gorgeous, that's for sure. What a journey. So basically, you were able to take your physical skills in photography and in staging, let's say, or lighting in the actual
Yeah, set
world.
design.
Yeah, set design, basically. Yeah. And you were able to translate that into the CG space, the 3D world. But here's the question for you. In real life, you have everything set for you. So if you go to a church, you want to film something. A church is, set up. You don't need to design the church anymore. How much of that do you do in CG? Is it already for you, the assets?
Actually, a lot.
A
A
lot.
lot, because yeah, we are familiar with, you know, blockbuster like film shooting, but trust me, in most of the cases, because back then I was just a graduate myself, basically a fresh talent, right? So most of my clients, they're equally like a fresh talent designer. I recall I involved in a very interesting collaboration with a bunch of fashion designer. They're just about to graduate from London School of Fashion. So that's one place trained plenty of like a famous designer, like, you know, yeah, Jimmy Choo, and yeah, plenty of them, Kate Moss, I believe. So they're in central London, and we usually like in most of my film or like a photo shooting case, I still need to plan the weather ahead. You know, if you go field shooting, you either go super early or super late, because that's where the lighting gonna look nice, interior or exterior. Because most of the fashion stuff, like they will request a pretty epic set. So usually we will figure out a way to add the fog or like, you know, wet the floor and make everything looks more interesting than the actual life should be. And those skill, when I jump into 3D, they become such a blessing, because usually in my personal work, how I tackle it, of course, I can easily figure out and find a very nice set or a package, like environment from the Epic Marketplace. Now it's from Fab. Yeah. But after that, if I want this thing to, you know, express my base, like my own idea, then I still have to do a little bit of makeup. So yeah, the lighting artist job, I recall you asking about that. So usually imagine we're basically makeup artists for games. So that's how I explain my job to my mom. So yeah, I think that makes the best sense. So usually it's like, well, we have the base, we have the amazing game, there's lots of interesting mission, but how to provide a immersive experience or like unusual experience which the player or the audience they couldn't experience in their day-to-day life, and that is our job, and that is also our creative, you know, goal. So to me, I think it's a job delivers overall experience, but adding lighting. but usually the lighting is based on the amazing environment work and based on the environment design. So I think it's more like we are just a makeup artist to help reveal the amazing work of our environment artist.
That's a very interesting point there. Here's the thing. When you say makeup, you probably, it's not as simple as you grabbing a brush and, doing the makeup. When it comes to CG, you probably need to know and understand a lot of pipelines, kind of being a generalist in a way, because you would have to play around with materials. You will have to play around with placements. You would have to play around with particles, so such as Niagara or VFX graph. You're kind of are needed to do visual effects in a way, I would imagine. There's a lot of technical things. So can you explain what if you're a makeup artist and what are the tools you're using in Unreal or other
So
engines?
in general, when we do, if we use makeup progress as a terminology, the foundation which we apply here for Unreal will always be the sun and skylight, because that is what controls your overall contrast level and the overall mood. So that will be the foundation. And then comes to the brush. So usually if we do makeup, the goal is to pop out the character's contour, right? So on top of the base, we need to do a bit of structure emphasize work, and that comes to the local lighting, which I preferably to call them lighting design, because after guaranteed the visibility of the overall level, it's our job to tell the audience or player where to look and where to go, and also how would this place might feel. Because if this is like a cemetery, it could be nice and warm with plenty of nostalgia, sweet memories, or it could be quite creepy. It's all depending on how we light it. And after that, the scene is being set, the mood has been told, so does the town, and then the next step will be to make it more impressive. So how we do that comes with secondary or support lighting effect. That is where we start to think about how the light will collaborate with any particle effect. It could be water, it could be splash, could be bubbles, or maybe smoke. Smoke and jet stream is a very common effect I'm using, because wherever we have insufficient lighting power, but we want the image looks like smoothly nice between the transition between bright and dark area, that's where the fog comes in. So usually this is the three major section you have to think about, but the order doesn't have to always be the same, because it's really depending on the scale of the thing, the mood of the thing, and also how the player gonna walking. Are they gonna running through it? Are they gonna stay there for a while? Or depending on the game, if it's a puzzle game, you probably want to tell more story by addressing certain area. But if it's an FPS shooter game, you probably, well, the player only worry about how may I survive, right? So you need to tell them where to go.
Because you're in a way you're enlightening them, right? So if you keep everything open, there is no mystique anymore or no hidden stuff anymore that could require a challenge. But at the same time, you also need to make sure that they are seeing the path where they need to go. And here's the thing, you as a lighting artist, I feel like you know those rules and you kind of know where to break them if necessary. Because like in some games it's probably for in certain circumstances, it's maybe better to not show the players where to go, in a way, right? I would imagine you had to go through that yourself too.
It's like either you tell a riddle or you're showing people around. It's more come to the designer's intention. So a huge discussion I usually will involved in my pre-production stage is I'm gonna speak to my designer and say, hey, what type of experience you wanna deliver in this very mission? So if it's an escort mission, of course guidance will be more important. And if this is a group combat mission and we just joking, it's like let's give everybody 90-degree spotlight, they wouldn't see it, but the enemy will see them quite well. So good luck, guys.
That's like cheating. in a way.
Yeah, but you know, you can make the game more difficult
Mm.
intentionally, or you can just make
True.
this guide easier. So the job role is like I'm a half tour guide, half makeup artist.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wanted to ask how much of when you're in a team, what are you, who are you talking to? Is it everybody, including the
Oh,
designers? Like,
everybody.
yeah. Can you tell us
Yeah,
a little bit about that?
everybody. But that's like a different stage. It's like it's no difference like running a show. It's like I like use my stage design like course a lot
Mm.
just because it's pretty much like that. Because at the beginning, of course, art director and designers, that will be like my main conversation target, because the designer will give me the skeleton, the backbone of the mission, and the art director gonna give me the vision. And my job is like, you know, keep them running, hit certain amount of the frame depending on the console, but also like take that into account. Meanwhile, try to achieve the best looking as much as possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the development stage, I would say environment artist is who I spoke to every day, just because they are start, you know, dressing up, bring this world alive from the white meshes. And there is some like, you know, potential bugs or risks. See if we are doing a forest and if the wood is very dense, then I'll probably tell them, oh, we don't need everyone to cast a shadow just because it just brings like less ideal transition light-wise or heavy the budget on performance. So yeah, it's plenty of like, it's very minor. Most of the conversation is minor, but it's very frequent. So for like pre-production, I probably have one or two kickstart meeting and that's it. But during the development, with environment artist, we basically speak every day. And in the end of the production, of course, when FX start jumping, because me and my role, lighting and VFX or even sound, we are pretty much like the very last few department that will touch the project before it's ready to go, it's before it's ready to shipping. So what we'll do at that point is like, you know, bug fixing or like if there's some problem and we have to fix them together. Because at the final stage, like the later stage of the game development, the little margin you will have when, you know, trying to fix something, but perhaps at this certain point we couldn't change the time of day anymore, or we couldn't move some certain environment asset anymore because that's actually a cover in the mission. So yeah, it's like your freedom will be slowly become like options on your table will be slowly become like little by little, but usually at that point stability overcomes you know, more visual polishment. So usually I will try to deliver the final look, like visual or artistic look, at the second last stage rather than save them last minute because that's gonna be too risky.
Yeah, I mean, one aspect of your work is, you know, if I'm a listener and I don't know much about game development, I would think, you know, you're playing with like real-time lights, putting this here, putting that there. Everything is flexible. It's all easy. What is the aspect of lighting artists' work that people don't know that is extremely and, you know, unflexible?
Okay, so I would say a funny part is I love real-time lighting, especially Lumen, because it makes the light behave pretty much like how it should be in the real world. But yeah, the stress part is actually very hidden. So I teaching for a while and some of my students told me like, Maria, I am very panicking when I'm just to get the level and drop the first light. And without explanation, I told my student, says like, yeah, I totally feel you, just because the first light or even like a sun angle, like 5 degree sun angle, could drastically change the overall look. So a fun part and the pain part of my job is you do a tiny action but make thousands of decisions behind it. So we have to training our eyes the prediction of the ability to read like devils in the detail, or like see if I fix one problem by changing the certain light source, angle, brightness, color, do I create another problem somewhere else? And that is a part two. The last part is the most difficult and it takes years of training. I do believe there's no other way to achieve it. That is, we do lighting, but it's not for movie or photography. So the player gonna running all the way around. So how do we like, you know, keep whatever we have and just make sure this light rigging will look nice as nice as possible in multiple angles.
Wow, you know, you have to keep a lot of stuff in your mind, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, just to watch over everything, meanwhile doing like tiny jobs. Sometimes, like, no joke, Jake, I could spend my whole morning just to think about and figure out a sound angle.
Yeah. It tells everything. It's you just you kind of decide what the player is seeing in a way, right? And that is a huge job to have. It's a
Absolutely.
huge responsibility. If you're the one deciding what they're going to see, you're the sun, you're the lights. It's a huge responsibility, that's for sure. And I wanted to go a little bit back to learning. And one question I ask my guests sometimes, especially like the more established ones as yourself, what would you do if you want to learn lighting art right now with all the resources that are available?
I think it's a very good timing if anyone wants to break the ice and join to like this profession. Well, of course, the industry, the market will always have high and lows, but for now I would say compared to when I decided to switch my profession from field lighting to video game lighting, there are so much free resource. Like there's a YouTube channel, there's people doing like yourself doing podcasts for knowledge sharing. So it's really easy to do the research part. And also back to my first topic, I do think art foundation, especially if you do lighting, then understand the foundation of digital on the traditional photography is really helpful because apertures, exposure, the zoom theories about control the contrast, they are working exactly the same in Unreal. And for real-time lighting, if guys doing like a field lighting and if they transfer into like a 3D lighting, I think they're gonna have very similar feeling like myself. It's like, though, yeah, I need to spend plenty of time to familiar myself with the software, the workflow, and you know, the bug fixing. That's something quite new. But at the end of the day, the sense of prediction is very important to us as a lighting artist. And I'm not talking about random guessing or, you know, tarot cards, future telling stuff. It's the ability of predict issue when you see the case and you're able to predict where we might have the issue or what might cause an issue later. So the more practice you've done, I think basically keep making mistakes. And the last part, I would say, if you want to learn lighting, do find some type of style. You know, find your favorite movie, find your favorite like director of photography, and watch those movies over and over again. That's what I do. I still watch like really old movie, like Pan's Labyrinth, and yeah, we just do like repeat that all the time. Yeah, I think that helps a lot.
Just a note, we lost your camera for a second there. But yeah,
Yeah,
you're
I see my
right.
camera. Yeah. Okay. Shall we pause here and you need to restart?
If you could disable it and enable it again, that
Okay,
would
I'll
be
try it
good.
again.
Let's just keep
That's very
trying. Maybe
interesting.
it works again. But like, yeah, you are totally right
Okay,
when it
it should
comes
work.
to like resources out there. Yeah, I see you again. Perfect. There's a lot out there, and there was a lot out there before there was a lot out there, in meaning of courses and online courses and universities. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. Like, even the black and white movies back in the day, they were masters. Like, the mass you could just watch one good old movie and study the composition they were doing, because they didn't have colors. The composition had and must have been perfect all the time. And compositions is a combination between assets placements and camera positioning, zoom, and lights. Lights is a huge part of that. How much of those are you doing in your work? Like, we get it, like lighting artist, of course, you know, you're doing the lights, but are you also touching on the positioning of the assets, the zooming of the camera, and so on?
Yeah, it's very often for the zooming of the camera. Definitely, like if we work with characters and if we work with cinematics, that's absolutely yes. And usually, game development in terms of lighting is no different than what I experienced, like the backstage of the fashion show or a musical. So on the surface, everything looks great. And imagine there's hundreds of people running around and totally not looking panic. And there's problem keeps popping out and we keeps fix it. So usually there is no like solid rules like, oh, you must do A and B. But what happened is like if there's a problem and find the right department and the right skillful person to fix it. So expect, of course, lighting as a profession, we oversee everything. So in that case, having the knowledge of every discipline is absolutely necessary. And I'm still learning new stuff every day from my environment teammate and my colleagues from FX. So one thing I do love this job is like not like in theater because every day the team pays, they cost money, and we are also restrictively limited by the choreography, the power shortage, because you can't get too much light, otherwise people on the stage get burned. And and also fire security, if nobody think about that. So that's the actual like limitation. Usually we just joke, if you run a show, the most important person is your truck driver because he's gonna deliver everything you need. And but in games, I would say like we have similar problem, almost exactly the same problem. But a parameter could be your friend or your colleague could fix you like in no time, and you just need to look do a Slack call with them. I think that's magical coming from like traditional theaters. Of course, I myself has been in the games industry for more than 10 years now, and I think most of the mistakes I've encountered or I made in my past also benefits a lot. So I would say the most difficult part is never about start learning, but the most difficult part is keep it going. So I would say to anyone who is looking for get into this industry, build up your portfolio, and no matter like how clumsy at the beginning you think it could be, but well, if you don't have the first piece, and it will never start. And once you start it, I hope you ne never give up.
I agree with you. I wanted to ask, like, you've been working all around the world, right? You've been in the UK, you've been in Germany, China, you mentioned as well, in the US. Has each place shifted how you approached art or collaboration, depending on cultures, and how was that?
Yeah, I think different place. I do sense different culture, and I think I've been lucky enough. Like most of the negative side of our industry so far, I rarely experienced it. Of course, I will have professional opinion conflicts, but usually we all aims to resolve the issue. So thankfully, there's no drama in my past decades of industrial experience. And culture-wise, I do learn a lot from everybody because, like, some place the culture is all about straightforward. And well, I think among those countries, I've lived in England the longest because for now I've been living in London for more than 12 years. And how I feel is I kind of like the culture here. It's like we do talk about the problem, but yeah, I don't know. But people have different opinion, but I would say English culture is like we will point it out, but in a very gentle way. So I quite like that. It's like, well, the last thing I want back to my university study days is like if I show my project and my professor says, ah, interesting. I know I'm so dead because that means they're not interested in at all. So
Oh no.
that's something, yeah, that's something that takes me a while to understand. But I would say different culture. I do feel like it takes a bit of time to understand. Of course, at the beginning, you could be very defensive. You could be very enclosed just because, like, for me, it's like I don't speak German at all. Even I worked at Kreteg Frankfurt. It's a very well, like, English-speaking city. But sometimes I still, like, encountered, like, the culture difference. But I think in Germany, like, my local colleague will tell me, like, if there's a problem, speak him out. Nobody cares, like, well, if you, like, sounds a bit too straightforward because that's, like, the way how they communicate, and that's great. And when I went to America, it's like, yeah, because well, I come from China, so originally I'm Chinese. So in our culture, Asia culture would be It's a bit like fall back. It's like we are very worried about offended others, or we never try to attract the attention to ourselves because we feel like that's not humble. But in America, it's like if people have a voice, they will speak them out. And somehow I think it's quite cool, like in, at the right place, especially if we talk about creative ideas. Because in Asia, I would say like, if it's in a meeting, the old me will think about it, but not speak him out. And I worry, like, what if I say something out? It's not to make much sense. I'm wasting everybody's time. But after work, like, aboard a year's like later, I'm like, okay, maybe we could try that. And we can take this offline. I'll present my idea later, but I just don't want to let you guys know I have this idea right now. So I think that's a good approach.
I mean, it's so interesting with different cultures and different ways and different approaches. That's like, game development is very much a people's business. Like, on both sides, you have people creating experiences for other people, people playing those. But like, what happens behind the scenes of like developing a game, I think a lot of people don't know the fact that every game is novel in its own way. Like, no one comes and plans games like they are, like it's a car, right? A car, like, we humans so far have pretty good idea how cars are should be manufactured, and there's a process, there's a factory, there's the parts, we have a pretty good idea, there's an infrastructure there. But with games, each game is its own genre. It's like, although there's so much categorization and education around it, it's still an area undiscovered, because what we do is we create worlds, literally, and then we skin those worlds with like assets and lights and everything else. But each project is novel on its own. So if you don't know how to communicate, doesn't matter how good you are in what you do, the game will suffer at the end. The quality of the game will suffer. That's why people see like those AAA games fail often. Because they get the look, they get the functionality, but somewhere, you know, between the lines, they maybe have hired two or three people who are really good at what they do, but they are a bad communicator. Have you ever faced that in your industry?
Yeah, totally. What I have experienced is not about a bad communicator. It's sometimes like people will be, for example, if you are developing the, like, subsequent or like continuous series of a very well established genre, usually those regulation not really coming from a director. It's like, I wouldn't name the studio, but I would say most of people, they want to play safe, because like I said, well, AAA is like a blockbuster movie, so there is a huge budget, but also it brings up huge risk. So people want to play safe. That is my humble opinion as a game development, because it's like, in the end, like, take my job as example, I got bugs, plenty of them, at the final stage, usually the last 2 weeks before we, you know, properly close the gate, like, okay, that's it, we're gonna ship it. But most of the bugs, they come in last stage, and they are not even causing by me. So it should be like a tech error, build difference, and that's very common. But usually because of the panicking, you know, the mood, sometimes in my job, or like I heard from my FX artist friends, we're probably gonna face lots of pressure. It's not like people gonna, you know, criticize your work. It's just like, it's like, oh, we're running out of time, can you guys please fix it? But in the end of day, we will find out this problem is not causing by us. But of course, imagine you wake up Monday morning, you open your email, or like you open your Slack chat, there's 10 people after you, and they all talk about different problems. So usually I would say, do not panic, it's just another Monday.
Wow. Yeah, this is really like behind the scenes aspect of it. I feel like I'm a VFX artist, right? You're a lighting artist. We come at the last stages of the production.
We are.
And usually we're not like onboarded very well. So what happens is when there's like something that's not working, it's always our fault or something. Or because we need to be onboarded, in my opinion, way before they actually onboard us, because we need to be able to navigate the vision of the game. We need to navigate the creation of the assets. We're not just going to snap our fingers and make the effects, right, or make the lighting work pretty well. It's not as simple as.
Yeah, usually, like in my case, I would say, thankfully, like I said, in most of the studio I've been worked with, like I do heard unfortunate stories from my fellow artists, but like as lighting, we onboard very early. That's like at the beginning, great. Like when the level is not a level, it's just like a design white box. So say if I saw like there's a valet and then the designer want completely dark night, I'll tell you, hey, it won't work. If you go in the center of the chaos, your player will suffer the visibility and there's no way we could fix it apart from adding millions of light, and later you're going to complain for the frame rate, right? So that wouldn't work. Yeah, so but I get it for FX, because I heard some of my indie friends, like because I do like consultations for like small studios and indie, mainly for lighting workflow, and also I do mentorship. So but most of my mentorship, they are like industry based, like established artists, so I don't really help students at this point, but I just do lots of like reviews and help them find the problem and refine their pipeline. So I get a chance to know, like sometimes the VFX team, because they are not part of the studio because they're quite costly, so they will get on board for the very project at last 2 weeks. So basically guys gonna jump in, get some fog, sprinkle some particles over there, and the most ridiculous request I've ever heard is like create a like avalanche within 2 days. I'm like, that's not gonna happen.
No.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So I think communication and the timing, and also it, I would say if there is something drastically like affect the developer side, usually it's a budget. That's my humble opinion. And timing, and sometimes most of these problems, they're coming out of our control, so there's nothing we can do.
So obviously, you know, you came from being a beginner in 2007, you mentioned, all the way to becoming like a BAFTA member. What do people not know about BAFTA? What is BAFTA? How was that? You know, what does giving back to you mean?
Okay, so yeah, BAFTA stands with, you know, it's a super long name, I'll try to remember. So it's the British Academy of Film and Television.
Cool.
So it's such a long name, but basically they are like, some say they are just like Oscar Association in Europe, in particular in the UK, because BAFTA in general is like a supportive organization. Of course, you have to be like, to prove you have certain industrial track, like 5 years or 10 years in the industry, or you work in London, or you have shipping titles as games. So the application progress is pretty much like a job. It's like you have to show them your LinkedIn and track the ship title. But the giving back is like, I have met lots of like industrial friends, and because I joined it just because back then I just moved back from LA to London, so of course I would like to expanding my social work a bit more. Well, living in London for many years, I do have plenty of friends in my personal life, but it's different, like, you know, like expanding the professional network. So that was my initial goal. And also so BAFTA will involve you to, you know, get a panel. If there's new games, you're going to participate in it, and for the judge if you want. And also you experience more resource, and also they do monthly meetup. I think it's pretty good, like if you want to have some industrial like related network. Also, it's quite chilling. They have like a fantastic location in central London. So yeah, we have like a monthly meetup. I saw lots of my ex-colleague over there. So I guess that's a benefit for being in this industry for a while. Eventually the BAFTA meetup becomes like sort of my, you know, like industrial friends gathering, because we can see each other once a month and nobody has to organize it, which is pretty good.
Wow, that sounds amazing, especially if you could like socialize and keep up to date.
Because it's actually very chill. It's not like everybody goes there for the whole night. We talk about business. In fact, we just check like how's it going. We talk about interesting movies, you know, the topics.
That's awesome. That's all. I wish there was something like that also for people with like 2 years of experience, and not just British, but like kind of like global movement.
Yeah, that's how I run my Discord server. Like a bit of side story
Yeah,
is like
tell.
when I firstly registered the Discord, and Discord told me, "Hey, do you know you could found a server and it's free back then?" So I did it, and then because with the limited resource, I just like, okay, there are not many lighting artists, right? So I'm gonna casually build up a lighting artist focused Discord. Of course, every discipline is welcome.
Yeah.
So I did that, and I posted my little soul non-professional message on my LinkedIn. I'm saying, "Hey guys, Discord says the server is free, so I found this guy. If you are lighter, join me. I went to sleep. I was on my annual holiday. I think it was summer, so I went to sleep, and then I wake up. There are 500 people in my Discord server. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this now? I was joking with my friend. Oh my god, now I must under sort of watch list somewhere. Then yeah, but my friend said, "Hey Maria, you said there's a like lighting focused Discord," and eventually I think I wouldn't take this credit, but more and more, like more of my friends in the industry, they also found their own lighters Discord server. People start sharing ideas, get courses, offer like job opportunities, like somebody's hiring, or you finished your personal work and just to show this to us, and we will always share, like cheering for you. And a while ago, I had my Discord server since 2021 or 22, I believe, and it's still running. So these days, like last month, I just arranged like a casual picnic in Greenwich. I was like, everybody's welcome. Then I got like a fellow lighters, and also I got to know lots of fresh talent because in London we have the amazing Escape Studio. So I got lots of students who says, "Hey Maria, can we come in? We're not like find a job yet. We're learning." I'm like, "Just come, guys. We're having fun." So
That's
there's
awesome.
nothing super serious. Like you don't have to be a senpai, you know, like what they say in Japanese. You don't have to be a senpai, but to me, it's like, well, you're just like years before me. That's like a Maria 0.05 or something version. So yeah, I always love to talk to people who is interested into this profession, regardless to their level, because I think that's how I feel when I just joined the industry, and I remember how difficult, you know, to swimming through the cold water, especially find a job abroad. So yeah, I'm happy to see guys got more resources these days.
That's awesome. Is anybody invited for the anybody who is hearing this, can they get to the Discord? Can we share an invite with
Yeah,
them?
I will leave the channel like over there, because usually my invite will have like a certain vet. So if anybody joins my Discord channel, you are more than welcome. But of course, be nice to others. And also, we have a social channel to share your portfolio
That's
or
nice.
LinkedIn or where are you working. But that's just to prevent, you know, sometimes we get scammers. You don't want people get in and post
Of
toxic
course.
ads over there. Yeah, so we have to vet everybody. But yeah, so far so good. I still get newcomers every time. If I publish my personal work, I'm very happy.
That's awesome. I'm gonna leave the link in the description below for sure.
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah.
We're reaching our 14 minutes, like the last 14 minutes, so I'm gonna maybe dive in a little bit with personal questions about yourself, and one of which when I was, researching your journey, I've noticed that you overcame cancer, which is a very inspiring story. And you went through two surgeries, is that correct, during your career?
Yeah, two surgeries actually. Yeah.
Can you tell us a
But
little bit about that?
the first one, well, it comes of nowhere. It's like literally out of nowhere, guys. Because I can tell, like, I was still working in California, so in Santa Monica. And of course, it's such a sunny place. And there's a day I just went to, you know, usual check, general check. And then my doctor told me, like, there's a little more on your arm. It doesn't look correct. Like, it doesn't look all right. So let's have a look. So I did like a removal that was really minor. And then they sent them to the lab. And 2 days later, I got a call. And the nurse, the lovely lady, she told me like, "Oh, Maria, I have a bad news for you, but don't be surprised. Don't be shocked because it's fixable." So I'm like, okay, whatever it is, like, tell me about it. Then she explains basically they found some cancer cell in that place. So I'm like, okay, can we trim them out? And then yes, it does. So back then, because I've already like been America for about a year, and London isn't, it doesn't has that amount of sun. I don't even go out very often because it's not hot. I have no idea how I get it, but I'm glad it's fixable. And also compared to who, like I do have like other very respective artists, like they're my art directors or like my previous co-workers. They went through way more serious conditions than that. So when I learned about this news, I was actually pretty calm. The only thing was like, okay, I'm gonna share this with my family once the surgery is done, so you don't have to, panic your parents, because we both know how Asian parents could react with the word. As soon as I heard the word, basically you're on like a sentence desk or something. So I just don't, the last thing I need back then, I was telling myself, okay, Maria, this is fine. It's fixable. It's just a bug. We're getting fixed. The doctor gonna do the job. So yeah, I was trying to keep really calm. The only funny outcome was my dermatologist. Yeah, he's really funny, and he tells me lots of jokes while we're having the surgery, which I really appreciate. But he's telling me this is a mini surgery, and at the end of the surgery, I got like, that's my second surgery already. So at the end, he said, oh, there are just 32 stitches. So I am not a surgery. I have no idea, but I'm like, it doesn't sound like the mini surgery. You wouldn't get like 33-ish stitches out of that. And then he told me a cupcake joke. I was like literally cracking while it's still bleeding,
Oh
right? So it's
no.
really funny. No, it's very funny. So yeah, sorry about the bleeding part, but it's quite funny because he was like, do you remember when you buy cupcake? Like the big cups, they say American size and industrial size. So I'm afraid this is like American size mini surgery. We're just like laughing out. So I think it's really a mindset, but thankfully, so thanks for asking though. It's not like a minor, but to any of our audience, if you are going through a difficult health situation and if that affect your work, I would say like take care of yourself first, because that's all we need. You need to keep yourself running first and then continue to fetch the gym. And the last thing I wish to share is stay positive.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the things that we could control and some things we can't control in life. But we could control to just stay positive and see the best in things. But you're an inspiration in that, and I appreciate you sharing it with other people, especially. There might be someone who, going through the same thing, regardless of being in an industry or different industries. But I feel like we need to put the voices out there with people with certain experiences as yourself and
Absolutely.
get it out there so people can feel empowered. So I wanted to also ask about if that have shaped your creative work, creative voice going forward. Have you felt like, all right, I have a responsibility now to do XYZ? How did that change?
Oh, I think I am a very, like, I live in my own world. That's the best terminology I could, like, describe myself. So back after that, the only things, like, for a while, because, of course, it's a surgery, it left a scar. So sometimes I will be a bit hesitant. And also, I am, like, I'm into alternative fashion. That's the way how I dress every day. So I'm into the Japanese Lolita fashion. So basically, it's a mix of Victorian and cute fashion. I do feel like dress up, like, cheers me up, and I really don't care how people on the street says me, but London is a fashion capital, so thankfully this is absolutely okay. And for responsibility wise, my personal work is always about my life or my experience, because it could be like the one on the screen right now. It's actually, I take inspiration from The Nightmare Valley, that is a movie from Guillermo del Toro. And usually I just do whatever excites me for my personal work. And most of the emotion side comes with my personal life. So without, like, reveal too much detail,
Of course.
I prefer to express the feeling. It's like if it's positive, sad, unforgiven or unforgettable, or some nostalgia. So I just tend to turn positive and negative power or energy into my art, because I think that's a very healthy way to express the feeling. Because life will always be challenging, and everybody has their own different like story.
Of
And
course.
years ago, when I was still in art school, I remember my professor was like joking, says a good artist doesn't have to paint well, but he or she has to make the paint to make people think. So I think that's kind of my creative creed. It's like if we could deliver certain look or certain emotion with visual language, not writing emotional post, because we are not emotional speaker or powerful, like, you know, speakers. But if we do art, just, you know, transfer your energy, whether they are negative or positive, into your creative journey, I think when the work speaks itself, and that is like the elaboration of like my own artistic journey. That's all I could tell. I hope it makes sense.
Oh yeah, of course it does. And we're reaching now to the end, and so we have 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you what I ask every guest: is there anything you would like to tell the people about, promote, maybe direct them towards something, let us know your
So for people who, I believe most of people who take this like a podcast to spend time, first of all, thank you for listening all of those conversations. And thanks to you as well, Jake, for having me. But if you're looking for relative study, because I usually do the learning notes on my blog, which is mariayu.com. So I will leave the link with Jake later. Also, I do like occasionally do lots of LinkedIn like a post about my learning journey. And till these days, I still do lots of personal work just for the same reason, express myself because I enjoy what I do, so that it will be my art station. But course wise, yeah, you will find most of my course on the art station store, the including free one and paid one. And I'm about to launch the latest course very soon. That will be the last part of the journey of illusion. So that's the name of my medium to like senior level lighting design and lighting workflow training source. So the first two is already out, but I was traveling around Venice and Amsterdam, lots of like Renaissance old hometown, just to gathering the experience. So in the latest course, you will have me talk about a certain type of classical like painting style lighting design.
Alyssa Maria, this was incredible. Your blend of like technical clarity or lighting clarity, if you might add, and artistic heart, like really shines through. I want to thank you again for showing up and empowering other people to maybe just chase what they wanted in life, and sharing your perspective so openly and honestly as well. And for everyone who is listening, check out Maria's work in the link below, and all the stuff that we mentioned throughout the episode will also be in the description. Leave your comments. Let me know what your thoughts are. As always, I'm Jack the Generalist, and I'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much.